People of the earth, throw down your weapons. You know, people ask me all the time, who are comedians I like? Who makes you laugh? And I'd have to say, Jim Short is the answer to that question. Jim Short is a guy, he's been slugging it out for a long time, like myself, and he's from Australia originally. He grew up in Texas. He lived in San Francisco. The guy's very interesting on many different levels. He's very intelligent, wise man about all of the things that's worth knowing in life. And the guy's been a great friend of mine. He's helped me move a couple times, and I think he's one of the most underrated comedians working in the world. I think the guy is a scream, and his jokes are very intelligent, and he's a wonderful guy. And enjoy this little chat that I had with my good buddy, Jim Short. You gotta take care of God. Somebody said surely, surely, surely. Somebody said surely. I've got a lot to learn, and Dr. Short, I'm talking about. So, I'm gonna ride. Jim Short, ladies and gentlemen, Jim Short. Is Jim Short for James?
Yes.
Because when you Google Jim Short, that's the second thing that it says.
What, James?
It says, is Jim Short for James?
Oh, that's the second
thing. On the Google.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the thing
is... there a more famous James Short, I'm wondering?
No, I don't know. There's a lot of Jim Shorts.
Yeah.
And the thing is, when you're a younger guy, you're like, oh, I'm Jim Short. I'm Jimmy Short. I'm like Jimmy Page, Jimmy Short. You don't realize how cool James Short actually sounds. It sounds like a knight.
Or novelist.
Or a 00 spy.
Yeah.
But you don't have that foresight when you're 21 and you're getting into stand-up comedy. Because you don't realize at the end, 20 years later, everybody's going to bring you on stage as Jim Shorts with an S on the end. And the connotation is some gym trousers. That people wear, you know.
Jim Shorts. Everybody adds an S to,
and that is my real name. Somebody asked me if I changed my name to Jim Shorts for show business.
I go, no, I would have been Jim Gigantic. I would have been Jim Gigantic.
Who changes their name to Jim Shorts and doesn't have a puppet? I'm going to be like Jim the Giant. James. So that's the second one. No wonder I'm getting no action.
What? Oh, no, I didn't see. But that's when you Google, anyway. When you Google Jim Short, that's like the second thing.
It's, the second thing is, you mean James? Yeah. Surely nobody would have Jim. Even Google knows it's a shitty name. Even Google's going, really?
Really?
I wish I'd have been around in 1988 to help you out, man. I would have got... Google is now my sort of like my guru, my spiritual helper. Google runs my career.
As I always call you, Jimmy Shelter.
Jimmy Shelter.
I always like that.
That's my other name. That's actually my Twitter.
Jimmy Shelter?
Jimmy Shelter, yeah.
I love it.
And then you have to explain to people, what does that mean? If I have to explain it, you can't afford it. It's Gimme Shelter with a joke.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's a fun little name, so yeah. But that's my name, Jim Shorts. And then one time I was checking into my hotel, and you know, as we are as comics, the club always books us in as whatever dancer name they have for us, you know. So I'm booked in as Jim Short, and my ID says James Short, and I'd lost my key. And you get one of these people who's like, hang on, you're James Short. Trying to get into Jim Short's room. Like, they couldn't Google it and realize it's the same guy. Like, oh, yeah, you got me. Crack security.
Right, like, isn't it on planes now? You can't go by your nickname. You have to go by your...
Yeah, you can't go by, you know, some other alias.
My favorite story of the whole year would have to be... Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones fell out of a tree trying to get a coconut. There's a magical poetry about that sentence. And you ask so many questions. What was he doing in a tree? Does he have to get his own coconuts? Surely there's a roadie that gets coconut and chicks for the band, you know. Mate, get me a couple of blonde birds and a nice tropical fruit, would you? So Keith's on the beach in Fiji, he's sitting there going, man, I could bloody murder a coconut about now. Sometimes you feel like a nut, and that's how I feel at this moment. Somebody get me a coconut? No, I'll get it myself. crawls up a tree. I'm a monkey. Falls out, cracks his head open. They have to cancel the Rolling Stones tour. I'm sure Mick Jagger was angry, because he's going to be the dad for the band. I told you not to be mucking about in those trees, Keith. Keith Bloody Richards, get out of that tree. Ronnie Wood in a rehab. I will turn this tour around. We'll all go, oh, mate. So Keith falls out of a tree. Oh, then there was a story that said it wasn't a tree. It was a jet ski accident. I don't think Keith knows what happened. Dude, what was it, man? It was a tree. A tree? No, it was a ski. Was it a tree or a ski? Mate, it was a bee. A bee zapped me in the ear and I fell back. I said, bloody hell. And as I was plummeting down to the earth, a magic badger flew by and picked me up and took me up around the stars. And I said, I'm enjoying this flight around the cosmos, you lovely magic badger. Mate, how's your family? Margaret Thatcher showed up and threw a coconut at me. And I said, all right. We're going to write down tree. It was so serious at one point, right, he had to have brain surgery and they thought he might have died. Could you imagine if that's what finally killed Keith Richards? He's been on rock and roll death watch for 40 years. He should have died every day. He wakes up, I can't believe I'm still here. Because they want to go on TV and go, Keith Richards died today of a massive drug overdose. He spontaneously combusted and the pieces were eaten by squirrels while they fell to the ground. Instead, they got to go, Keith Richards died today of a coconut-related mishap. Was that a typo? Then a couple of years ago, he fell out of a chair in his house. He said he was reaching for a book, broke his ribs. What book was Keith Richards going for? Everybody's got their dual sides of their personality, you know, out-of-control rock star and bookworm. After a heavy day of hanging out on stage and shagging groupies and throwing TVs out the window and a couple of coconuts, that's when I like to sit back, relax and unwind with a nice book. Harry Potter, you clever bastard. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
What are the most horrendous hotel experiences you've ever had? As a comedian, I mean, but what's your whole impression of the experience?
I remember once, many, many years ago, I was doing a gig up in the Tri-Cities area, up in Washington State, Pasco, and I can't even remember the other cities. That's how much I love this area. And not that the area is bad, but they had the comics staying in, you know, where there's an old sort of, it used to be a motel, then it was an office building, and now it's just sort of like, just storage, sort of like one of those sort of buildings like that. They had the comics staying in there, and it was all sort of concrete. There was hardly any furniture, no light bulbs in any of the fixtures, no television. I said, I'm not staying here. Mm. Not that I've ever really pulled a lot of, I'm not staying here, but I wasn't staying there. I ended up paying for my own hotel room, which was almost as bad, but it had lights.
I told you the time in Akron, Ohio, years ago, there was a place, I think they still have it, where you stay in the back of the club, yeah. When it was like some converted warehouse area, and there's no windows. And I was there in February, and it snowed in. Me and the other comedian, this guy from Indianapolis, I won't say his name, were snowed in, and he was watching Teen Dance USA party every day, which was on in the afternoon.
Well, that's a reason to stay in anyway, right?
And so we're watching this.
Do you have access to get out?
Well, yeah, but we're snowed in, and
there's nowhere to go.
I had a car. There's nowhere to go. And he says to me one afternoon, "Want to watch videos of me fucking my wife?" And I'm like, "Well, I wouldn't." And he was a portly gentleman, and his wife was. She was, I think, larger than him. And he put it on, and I just, well, thanks, man. I'm going to go read.
I'm going to get ready for the show. Who brings those videos with them on the road, man? That's great.
I'm trying to remove all pornography from my life, ladies and gentlemen. Pornography is a human rights issue because it is the exploitation of male loneliness.
That was pretty disturbing.
So you're basically, that, to me, that whole idea is just crazy that you're stuck. You don't even, I mean, it's one thing to leave the show. We already feel like not like human beings anyway. But we at least get to leave the showroom and go back to the hotel.
Yeah.
So if you just like, okay, well, I'm going to go back here now.
Well, and this place was terrible like this too, because there was a big metal door that connected the club to the apartment. And I mean, there was a door you could go in and out on the side of the apartment, but it was this door, and like at 7 they'd unlock it. You could hear the ka-chunk of metal.
Oh, in the room. So,
yeah, so it was like the jail cell was open. And it was a big metal door with a sound.
Although, granted, was it because of you or because of Tubby there with the video camera? They were trying to keep him off the stage.
Keep him away from the waitress.
Yeah, you want to see me boning my wife last night on stage? Here's a fresh video here. I never worked that one. There's somewhere that, you know, I stayed in some pretty... You know what it is, though? Sometimes you ever stay in a really nice place, they have you set up in a nice, nice hotel.
It happens.
And you walk in, and everybody gives you that look like, why are you here? They just know that you don't belong. Like, oh, the show people, you know, somehow.
No, I've never had that problem. I always will walk in like the Rolling Stones.
Yeah. I don't.
Start bossing people around.
Excuse me, I need that wall taken out, and I need some soundproofing because there's too much traffic, and I have to get up in the afternoon, and just get out of that way and send up a couple of room service. No, I walk into some of these like really grand places, and they all look at you like, why is the pool boy, why is the pool man inside here? You know, why is this scruffy fella hanging around? Man, that could be my own projection.
I think
the feeling there, but you do stay. Sometimes you stay in. You know what it is? I'd rather stay in a lesser hotel close to the club than a really nice place 10-15 miles away.
Yeah,
because the access to get to, as long as it's clean, that's all I really care about. As long as it's clean and I can walk across to the gig, I'd rather do that than have to stay somewhere really nice that's way down the street. Plus, hotels now, they want to charge you for internet. They want to charge you for everything.
Why is it that the nicest hotels, like the Hyatts and the Marriotts and these really the higher-end hotels, charge you for internet? When the cheapest motels, like Motel 6 and Comfort Inn and shit, it's free.
They're like, come
it's
on,
free
please,
at Denny's.
Please
it's free
come
at freaking McDonald's.
Please come here and download some of these.
I think it's because of, like, the traveling businessman doesn't give a shit about a $25 a day internet
access. It's an expense that they're getting back from their company anyway, whereas we're just trying to watch every diamond we have. They do that, and
that's why I always take all the soaps and shampoos.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard the old adage that you haven't made it in show business if you still take the shampoos from hotels? Have you ever heard that?
No.
Yeah. Somebody told me that once.
I did go by the old adage of, I haven't made it in show business. It's like the other one about having fuck you money.
Yeah.
Enough money to tell everybody fuck you. Yeah. I went to the bank. I have fuck me money.
That's classic.
Yeah, some of these hotels, then you get a good hotel at some of these gigs, and then some other comic will like ruin it.
Oh yeah!
You like you go. Oh, I'm going to that one town. At least I get to stay in that nice place.
Right there.
And they go, and then they take you to somewhere else. And you go, what happened? They go, oh, so and so.
Sacramento was like that for years. The Sacramento Punchline. You stayed in this nice hotel.
Trashed up the hotel.
And it, you know, they had living rooms, and there was like a split level townhouse, and you had a fireplace in the living room, and there were jacuzzis on each little unit of four. And I know exactly who it was. I won't say their name. Somebody got drunk in the bathroom and woke up, and it was dark, and they wrecked the place. And then comedians couldn't stay there anymore.
Couldn't stay there again. Yeah.
Well, thanks.
Ruining it for them.
And then they moved it to, you stayed to like a Quality Inn down the street that was next to the Ford dealership. And all day you could hear, Bob, pick up line four. Bob, line four, please, Bob. Bob, please pick up line four.
I stayed there once. It was Labor Day weekend. And the fair was in town, the state fair at Sacramento.
Yeah, that's fun.
It was one of those hotels where they moved us to after that incident had happened. And these people, and you know, I don't like staying in those rooms where you got the door that adjoins to the other room.
Yeah.
Some of these cheap hotels, the wall is so thin, you really are in the same room with them.
Yeah.
It's just like you've drawn some sort of sheet between the two of you. And these people came in about 2 in the morning and they started to fight. Like screaming argument fight.
A couple?
A couple. And then about after an hour of that, they started getting it on.
Hey, you know.
And this went on, and then they would fight, and then they would get it on, and it went on all night. And
to some social classes, that is considered foreplay.
Yeah, it could, especially for the state fair, right? Guess my weight and get a corn dog. But it was, yeah, it's just some of the places you stay on the road. I love staying close, though. I love staying close to the venue. Because then you get the access. People don't realize, like, you go, oh, it must be so great being on the road and being away. And it is, but, you know, after the show sometimes, you don't have a car. It's almost like being a prisoner where they're like, okay, your ride's going. Like, they take you back to the room and lock you on. Oh, we'll pick you back up tomorrow. Like, you have an hour of exercise.
Right.
And then you just sit in some hotel room somewhere. It's like a what is it, gilded prison? Some kind of phrase like that, some eloquent thing. But you know, that's why you got to meet people and go party on the town wherever you are, right?
Right, and as a guy who doesn't drink or smoke or anything, how do you do
that? I don't meet anyone. I sit in that room. Cursing the fact that I don't have any internet.
Oh, my God.
I got to pay for the internet in this place. I won't do it. Oh, that's the other thing I was going to say. 11 o'clock in the morning checkout is unconstitutional.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
It's so wrong.
Yeah.
And then they call you up like at 11:01, like, you know, checkout's at 11. I'm like, bullshit. Thomas Jefferson said that man has the right to stay in a room till noon at least to get his
till
shit
noon.
Out. 12:15 if you're generous.
Yeah.
You know?
So Adele did this to me the other day. They called it 11:15. Would you like us to make a reservation for one more night? Like, what a subtle way to be a cock. Which is like, and it wasn't even a fancy motel. We were on the highway, you know?
They're just trying to let you know, like, it's time to get out.
But, it, you know, it's good to get to know truckers, I guess.
Right.
You've had a lot of triumphs in this business, though. You, how many Lettermans have you done?
One.
Oh, I thought you'd done like 3 of them.
That's the good thing about doing it. People just go, yeah, I think you've done a couple, right?
Well, the name Letterman is plural by itself.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it just,
I've done the Letterman.
I've done Letterman.
So, I've done the Letterman show. So people just figure like, oh, he must have a bunch. But it's just one. Now, I did 3 Fergusons, so that's sort of like a Letterman when you combine them all. So
3 Fergusons equal one. Is that what you're saying?
Letterman. Yeah, so I've done 2 Lettermans. I was the first comic on Ferguson, actually.
Were you really?
Yeah.
I like that show. I think he's probably the best.
It's an interesting show.
I think he's funny. He's the most entertaining.
Well, what I like about his show is that if it's evolved. From when I went there, I was out there on the second day ever. And it was brand new. And what it is now, some seven years later, what he does up front, I don't know how they write that. And he remembers it. It must be a little bit of like pitching in ideas. For him to freeform that much each night and it to look so seamless is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Even if they do sit down and they write some of it, I don't know how they do it, but for him to just get there and just talk, because nobody does that. Everybody comes out and does, you know, this week such and such happened, and the bullshit topical monologue jokes that are sometimes funny and sometimes not funny. He just goes up there and does that stream of consciousness thing where you go, how did you figured this out today? Do you just, I mean, that's a pretty great ability to do that.
Yeah.
But, yes, I'd like to do the show again.
He's another guy that he doesn't drink, so.
He doesn't drink.
Yeah.
Yeah, not anymore, but he did drink, so he's got all these great backlog of stories. But, yes, I did one Letterman episode. I was on there, I was supposed to be on, and I got bumped once, so that's, people think I was on there twice, but.
And you didn't get to get back on?
No, I did go back on, but I was on, I have a joke about it, you know, I, I joked that I was on, because my episode, it was me and Al Gore. Al Gore was also on my show, and you go, I did really well. And that's the key. If you want to be hilarious on national television, have Al Gore go first. Because he's like a global warm-up. He'll get him right where you need him. He's a little dry, you know, like the planet's on fire, you know, polar bear sweating his balls off on a piece of ice. But thanks, Al, that's where I needed him. But it's amazing when you're backstage because, you know, I've watched Letterman since his first...
I know, man. We're the same age, and we this.
It meant a lot.
I was in high school, I used to write letters to Letterman, hoping that he would read it on viewer mail.
Right. That's when he used to do that. Yeah, and everybody would write, and you're like, "How do they pick these people? I'm writing them gold
every week." Exactly. When I was 15, like, totally.
You're trying to set him up, like, this will be funny, you know. And
I always thought one day I'd go to Letterman and there'd be like a wobbly table and I'd see all my letters underneath it all.
Hey, thanks. You really helped out over the years. Keep sending them in, man. Keep sending them in.
That show seems almost impossible to get. I've never was asked to do it, not even close. So I'm very impressed that you did it.
Thank you.
Our next guest is a very funny gentleman who is making his debut with us tonight. And here, look, here's a copy of his new CD. It's entitled Deep Beneath the Surface of the Earth. Wow. Very provocative title.
Telling you.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the very funny Jim Short.
Thank you. Good evening. This is a really big deal for me because I'm a comedian and, you know, what do I have to show for myself? I make about $6,000 a year telling jokes. I have some books, a couple of pairs of trousers, and that's about it. And I thought, man, I'm a loser. And then it hit me and I realized I'm not a loser. I've tried. I am a failure. I'm a foreigner. I'm from Australia. I've got family history in the United States. My great-grandfather actually survived the 1906 earthquake of San Francisco. He lived in England, and not a scratch, right? Now, he left England to go to Australia, not as a prisoner. He was an alcoholic. He drank so much, his family paid him to leave England. And, yeah, that's the proud stock that I come from. And, look, when you drink too much for English people, you... Yeah, you are Australian. Here's what annoys me, though. As a foreigner, I can't run for president. That's the rule. You have to be born here to be president, right? Thanks a lot, land of opportunity. Yeah. Governor of California, yes, but... 35 is the presidential age, and I don't think that's a mature enough age anymore, because you don't want to see my generation as president, right? Me and my friends moving my stuff into the White House. Bunch of blokes with milk crates full of DVDs. Yeah. Just standing in the Oval Office, right? The president told me to put this box in the corner. I love America. I love Americans. You're proud people. You got some boisterous people, right? You ever see those guys who are always like, we're number one, you know? And yeah, right. And then you get these people who leave the country and they're like, we're Canadian. You can catch any American that's pretending to be Canadian, right? You just ask them one question. Hey, man, where are you from in Canada? Oh, damn. But I love your anthems. How many anthems do you have in America? You got Star Spangled Banner, that's a great one. And you got God Bless America. That's the best. You are blessed by God. Yeah. England, England has God Save the Queen. One person. One person is saved, right? You, whole thing, blessed by God, right? And I love the Canadian anthem. The Canadian anthem is like an afterthought. It's like, oh. Canada. Oh, yeah. But what I love. Here's the best thing in America. America has the best looking news people in the world. They're gorgeous. They're like models. They're young, tan, they have ridiculous names. I'm Stone Canyon. Here's the news tonight, man. They see news in England. England, they don't have models. They have the most decrepit, inbred, twisted creature. They find them in caves. Shine the light over there. Every time. You ever see BBC News? It's always like, hello, how are you? A jolly old time. Thank you very much. Thanks for that.
It seems like that's almost dead now, other than Ferguson and, I don't know, The Tonight Show doesn't put a lot of comedians on. Letterman, I don't know what the controversy is with Eddie Brill. I think the controversy should be they don't put very many comedians on, period.
Well, that's the thing about it. I mean, you know, and that just all went down today, that Eddie Brill is not the...
Eddie Brill got fired today.
...the talent coordinator anymore. He's still doing the warm-up, but Eddie's had the job since about 98, 99, somewhere around about there, that he's booked the comics. And I mean, some people can disagree with him because they're not on the show, but I mean, he has a specific vision of what goes on there. And I, you know, it all stems from some New York Times article that seems like it was a bit of a hatchet piece on him, according to him. I didn't read it.
I read it. It definitely was a hatchet piece, you know.
Yeah.
Somebody who's, I think they would have twisted around something, but the curious thing is that they got him for being like sexist, that he said that something against women, and he got Karen Rontowski on the show this year. He like fought to have her
on there. She's said some really,
well, that's admirable. She's another comedian, and you know, as hard as it is, man, to be a woman out there slugging it out. Well, Karen's, you know,
it's hard for. I mean, that's the thing. It's just, if you really boil it down, there's not that many really funny comics anyway,
period. Yeah,
men or women, there's probably just more men doing it, so it's just that ratio there. But you know, what it comes down to is doing it as a comic, getting to do the Letterman show was not a right. No, but not everyone gets to do it.
Yeah,
I got to do it just because it just happened that I had a set that I was working on that was quite
well. I think you've consistently done outstanding performances, and you got the right people's attention.
You're gonna get
Eddie's known me for years. I think consciously, you know.
Yeah.
He had to really, you know, mm-hmm. make a decision.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing about it.
It was no accident I didn't do the show. He knew damn well the work I was doing.
Well,
so
there's some people now going, oh, wow, maybe I'll get a chance to do the show. And then some people going, oh, shit, I might not get back on that show. Because who knows who will take over that job.
Well, it's just a funny business, and you got to really appreciate it. Yesterday, Todd Glass came out on the Mark Maron podcast, and I want to announce to the world that I'm queer because the gay circuits are so much better. You know,
exactly.
They got cruises they go on. They're like, you meet really nice people, and it pays better.
It's just,
see, there's no shit.
It opens up a whole new world.
There's no videos watching some guy from Indianapolis bone his overweight wife.
No, instead you got to sit there with some comic going, "Watch me bone my boyfriend." Well, we had a
oh my god! Oh yeah! Oh yeah! 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 Yeah!
I have to to be careful how I say this because anybody can cut up audio. I was about to say we had a gay experience, but...
I forgot. I'm so glad you remember that.
Well, the first time we ever met was in... we were working a hotel then. We were working at the...
Reno? Was that when we first met?
It was Bally's. It's something else now. We were in Reno,
and
Nevada.
You can talk about the guy because he had a scandal. He was booking the Arsenio Hall show.
Oh, yeah. You want to talk about another guy that had a...
What were you thinking
sexist,
about?
No, yeah. I forgot about that as well. Yeah. It's funny how this all ties together.
I thought that's where you were going.
No, I was...
I forgot that we had done this Bally's in Reno, and you eat in the employees' cafeteria, and they were like, if you tried to leave with a banana or an orange, they were like real dicks about it.
Well, that's the very first time I met you. It was July of 1992.
And I had pockets full of roast beef.
And we both had...
I said, hold the door, brother.
We both had the long hair. Yeah. I was living in Texas at the time. You were in San Francisco. You drove up in your big white Cadillac. And I'd never met you. And I was going to go to San Francisco the next week. And I just figured I'd catch a ride with you. I didn't even know you. That's how it was back then.
That's how it was, yeah.
I just get a ride with Tom Rhodes. I don't know this guy. If I don't get along with him, I'll catch a bus. I'm sure I can get out of Reno.
Yeah.
I was going to go to San Francisco to see Hicks, who was playing there the next week at the Punchline. That was my plan. But we were working at the hotel, and we hit it off immediately. And I remember you had a plate of pineapple you took from the from the cafeteria.
That was
it. You walked up, I think it was upstairs, to the casino room, the main floor of the casino. And you were going to go to your car to get something or do something. I don't know. You were going to go to the car, and we're walking out. And security went nuts. Like, sir, you cannot – pineapple cannot leave the premises. You cannot take – and we're like – are you fucking serious? Like, really?
One guy had his hand on his baton.
And it's like walkie-talkies and shit were going off. There's a pineapple situation going on at the front door. And we're like, and it's almost like, that picture of Jim Morrison when he's being arrested in New Haven and he makes that goofy face? It's like, you've got this pineapple. And I was like, fuck, okay, officer, all right, take my pineapple. And so we're just laughing like, fucking really, pineapple? Like, you care that much about the pineapple? So that's the sort of the regime we were working against. I was the opener. You were the middle. This is how long ago it was.
Yeah.
You weren't even headlining. And the headliner was this guy, nice enough guy.
What was his name?
I don't know, can we say?
Yeah, because he got fired from the Arsenio Hall show. There was a scandal where he was feeling, he said he was casting a sketch, and they needed guys with nice butts, and so he was feeling the butts on the audition, and so he got fired.
Well, you have to know in advance. You can't put some guy on TV with a bad ass. Somebody has to feel that and know that it's good. So he got canned from that job. This was like a year or two later.
Yeah. After we had worked with him.
And that's the one thing you can say about the Arsenio show. There was never a not nice ass on that program.
That's the truth.
That's what it's known for. It broke down racial barriers, yes. But no man went on there with a not nice ass. Quality control was in effect.
And it was this guy, this patriot on television that did it.
This guy, he was one of those guys that he was a headliner. And whether or not he had the time, he didn't want to do the full...
He didn't want to do his
45 minutes of material.
So he had 20 minutes.
First off, I'm opening, right? So he tells me, between you and him, do 10 minutes. Like, I'm not doing 10 minutes, because if I go up and do 10 minutes of material in between you and him, somebody from the club's going to go, why are you fucking doing 10 minutes of material? Who do you think you are? So partly it's a buffer to go between you and him, because you're a pretty strong act. And he just didn't want to do the time. So he hits about the 25 minute mark.
I'd say 20.
Let's bring them other guys back out here and do some improv.
He calls us on
to
do improv.
We're back there bullshitting around. Like, are we going? Are we on?
Yeah.
So we go out And we're doing some, and you know, look, I'm not an improv sketch guy. I've done it. I'm not that good at it. I'm not either. All this stuff. So we're doing something where it was, okay, you have an item and you don't know what it is, and you're returning it to the other guy at a shop or something. It's a refund or some bullshit like that. Improv people will know what the fuck I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, so the return of the item.
He sets it up. And then he fucks off backstage, and you and I are on stage. I have this item I'm bringing back. I like, you know what it is, and I don't know what it is as the guy, and I have to guess because you're like, oh, it's very very brown and you know whatever, some bullshit like that. And then you said at one point, like, we've gone on for about 5 minutes, and you go, hey, where's the headliner at? Shouldn't he be up here right now?
He was totally off the stage.
He was backstage, like, you know, bullshitting around. So, but we spent a lot of time with him. We went bowling one night.
Yeah, there was a bowling alley at the time.
And it slowly emerged through the week. Not slowly, pretty fucking quickly, you know, came out that he was a gay gentleman.
He told us a story about blowing a homeless guy.
Right. Well, we went. Well, this place had a bowling alley, and we're bowling, and he's like trying to like hit on dudes in the next lane, which is like, hey man, that's fine, but you know, I don't. You, on your own time. We're bowling here.
Focus.
Holes involved.
Focus.
And pins.
Hey, pick up that spare. Focus.
Yeah, pick up that spare. Not that dude over there. I mean, he was actively trying to hit on young straight guys over there, which, yeah. You know, I don't care who you hit on, but there's situations where it's like, you know, somebody's going to get annoyed and come over and, you know, especially in a bowling alley. Most people don't go, hey, man, I'm flattered, but no, thank you. It's going to be, hey, motherfucker, hey, you three queers, you know, some kind of shit like that. But, yeah, over Eskimo Pies, I think, he told us the story of when he blew a homeless guy.
Yeah.
And then he left, and then you and I, we just sat there, and you know, we've known each other 3 days, and we go, he blew a homeless guy. Wow. You know, I mean, you know, Comic Relief thinks they helped people out, but this guy really went the extra mile, you know? You need a sandwich? You need some food? You need a Hummer?
Let me drink.
Let
you
me help you. You know, I could go do a set or I could go blow homeless guys. So, yeah, that's that brings it back. So, yeah, Eddie Brill.
That was funny. Oh, go ahead.
Never blew a homeless guy that I know of, but maybe, you know, Todd Glass? No, I don't know. I don't know if Todd Glass blew a homeless guy.
No, I don't
but
think
it
so.
But it all comes together somehow.
Todd's always, I always like Todd. He's a classy dude and wildly
great.
Funny.
Funny guy. It's about time.
But I remember I remember a bit you did back then about you two being starting to be really commercial. This is not a commercial song about it.
Oh, some silly,
this,
yeah, the silly jokes
is,
you do with
this
the
is Hyundai,
course.
Bloody Hyundai.
Well, back then it was...
I thought it was a great joke.
Yeah, it was silliness, you know. Back then, it was not as acceptable for bands to do commercials, and U2 still hasn't really done appeared. They've had some sponsorship, but yeah, it was about a Hyundai commercial.
They're like, you know, I mean,
yeah,
they're kind of serious.
Exactly, and this is sort of that time period.
And they
like,
their money is all in Holland now. It's not even in Ireland. So
yeah, they're
which, like, you know, if you're going to tell governments to give up, you know, third world debt relief and shit, you know, why don't you keep your money where...
Well, that's why I love about how...
Go to the government that could help it.
Yeah, right? That's why I love, like, it was all the Irish rockers, them and Geldof and everybody that put together the Band-Aid to help save Africa. And then Ireland is... pretty much broke right now. I think they're going to be calling Africa up pretty soon. Like,
hey, can we have some of that
get
money
some
back?
Of that money back, man.
We helped you when you were down.
Yeah, they're going to have to do a benefit song for their own country.
I know you've heard this. Is probably just like an old wives' tale or urban mythology, but there's the story about Bono was on stage in Ireland, and he goes, every time I clap my hand, a child in Africa dies. Some guy in the audience yells, well, stop fucking clapping then.
Yeah, I already hope that that's true.
Yeah, totally.
I already hope that that's true.
So, you won the San Francisco Comedy Competition. That's another big feather in your bonnet.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you eventually do it enough times, they just give it to you.
It's just like, we're here, kid.
Here you go. No, it was. I did it a bunch of times.
We saw you crying by the Ferris wheel.
That was the first time I did it. It was 92, when you were in it that year. It was shortly after I'd met you.
Oh, yeah, yeah, with the
We had a bunch of fun adventures.
We've had some funny stuff happen together. We were with...
opening night, which was at the Punchline Monday night. It's 20 acts with intermission. Goes up and does 20 minutes.
Oh, I forgot.
And you're supposed to do 5 to 7.
Yeah.
And you're disqualified at 7:01.
Oh, yeah, because he wanted to just win the whole thing on the first... He just thought, well, fuck the rules.
He did everything. He did it all in one night. He did 20 minutes. And everybody's going, holy shit, how long is this guy going to do? And it was stellar material, too.
I had a dream.
I had a dream.
Big Bird went to Africa. And when he got off the plane, they ate his ass. But there was the funniest thing. We're doing the competition and... We're eating at a Denny's in
Santa Cruz
late at night. And we're in Santa Cruz. It's a lovely place. All the Bay Area is. And he just goes, he looks around like he's about, you know, like he's looking for, like he's being followed or something.
Our
waiter was gay?
Was possibly gay, I think.
I just thought it came out of nowhere. And he just looks around and he goes, I like San Francisco and all. I just can't get used to all these faggots. And me and Jim were like, what?
We're eating pancakes.
We're like, what are you talking
about? Pancakes.
Where? It's like, what? Who's bothering you? What's everybody, you know, around the competition was lovely. Every venue we've been to, people couldn't have been nicer.
Actually, it was a great table because it was you. Everybody was scattered around this, you know, everybody after the show went there. It was you and me at this table with that guy and a now convicted rapist.
Oh, was he in the competition with us?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't remember.
Yeah, at that table.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny, you and I have been good friends for a long time, and you've never drank and partied, and you've been around me when I've been completely blottoed and just Keith Richards stumbling around and shit.
I remember, well, I'll tell this, you can cut this shit out if it's not something you want out there. Tom says to me a couple years ago, he goes, yeah, man, I was feeling really run down, and I didn't know what was wrong. You know, I went and got a blood test and had myself checked for you know, AIDS and all this stuff. And I go, dude, it couldn't be the fucking nonstop 25 years of drinking, partying, fucking drugging, living comedian life. That might not be why you're a little tired.
Whew, I'm bushed.
And he goes, maybe so. some comics, I mean, they really live it up, and that's great, you know. But
you got any other great stories? Most
about you?
Frolicking.
Let me think here. No, I don't think I do. Yeah, I got a couple of stories. Like, every now and then, like... Well, when I was living in Texas, and you came through there, we went to the Alamo.
Yeah, I remember then when
like
I was...
Late at night, you and me and Nick DiPaolo.
I was in Dallas, and you took me to the Hooters, and that's where we...
We went to the Hooters, right?
Did your pants.
And Tom took a shine to a waitress. Now, this was back about 1995. And Tom got all shy and didn't want to approach this girl to invite her to his show. The Hooters was right across from the improv where Tom was working. And I just happened to have some passes to the club. And they said, admit to. And I said, here, let me hook you up here. I'll give them to her and tell her to, you know, he's the comic at the club and you should come along. But I changed it from admits to admits you. And I gave him... Oh yeah, you
and you go. So I think you're going back into the Hooters to give her the free passes.
Yeah.
And I'm staying in the car. Some and you just go. I'll be right back.
get your pants off. That's always been our little catchphrase together. Get your pants off. Like Jim was going to do so well in his speech to the girl that she's going to be back.
She's coming back here with wings.
And that I should just get my pants off and prepare for what's about to happen. Get your pants off. I love it. So what about, speaking of...
I helped you move to Los Angeles the day of the OJ verdict.
Wow, was it the day of the OJ verdict?
Yes. You were driving to LA. You had everything all packed up. I was going to drive your Cadillac. You were going to drive the U-Haul. And we were in San Francisco. And we sat there watching a TV, watching the OJ... Is it the OJ? It was the OJ verdict. Yeah. To make sure there wasn't going to be a riot that we were driving into.
Mm. Yeah, those days in California, that was like the weather. You had to watch the news to see what
what
rioting was happening in certain areas.
He was acquitted, and we went, let's hit the road. It's going to be fine. There's not going to be shit burning in Los Angeles tonight. So then we drove down to that lovely pad you had up in the hills.
Oh, yeah. God, that pad was fantastic. When I had the sitcom money, and I was living on top of the Hollywood Hills, and my apartment was all glass, overlooking the downtown Los Angeles and all the twinkling lights.
You had that little balcony outside.
Yeah.
Looked down.
And all I did was, and I lived with this actress, and all we did was walk around naked drinking wine from goblets. It was terrible.
It was that kind of life.
Yeah.
And then you moved to New York, and you had like a really great place down there. I mean, you always lived it up. You always had great places to live. On Wall Street, of all places.
71 Broadway, right at the entrance of Wall Street. Yeah, that place was phenomenal. It was three blocks from the World Trade Center.
Although, as I told you, I stayed there a couple of times. And because it's Wall Street, it shuts down at 5, basically. There's nowhere to eat.
No restaurants.
So as a comic,
no grocery
come back
stores.
From a gig, there's nothing around there except for what?
There was a 24-hour porno shop that sold pornography.
I told you. I was so hungry one night, I was going to go next door, see if they had any edible underwear.
You got
just because that was the only chance of some shit to eat.
You got any edible underwear? Because I'm starved. I'll take whatever flavor you got. That's classic. Well, I've always let you stay at my pads. You've always had keys.
Yeah.
What, you got any memories of Mitch Hedberg, Bill Hicks? You got
You and Mitch and I hanging out at the Comedy Cellar. This is in February of 99. I think I probably spent that week there. I probably spent some of the week with Maron and some of the week with you. I think you went out of town and I stayed at your place after that.
Mm.
But we went to we were at the Comedy Cellar, then you met us down there. And then we went and got falafel, probably around the corner. Then we all went back to Mitch's place at the Chelsea Hotel.
Yeah.
And he was doing his second Letterman the next night. And I went there and hung out in the green room. Courtesy of Eddie Brill, who let me go in there, who was a good man. You know. You got to give up to Eddie where, you know, he takes care of people. But, I get to sit in the green room with Martha Stewart and her dogs and watch them be brushed.
You didn't get her number?
I did not get her number.
You didn't try and light that up?
She could tell. The dogs were, dogs let it be known.
Your apartment would look a lot different now. You've been as forthright with Martha Stewart as you had been the Hooters waitress.
Yeah. Martha, get your pants off!
Get your pants off!
I remember we spent, the Chelsea Hotel, quite a legendary place, and Mitch was living there, and...
Yeah, I remember I had the pad in Wall Street, and Hedberg was... living at Chelsea, and very short walk between. I just walked home
from
there loads of times. And it was great, too, because I was next to the World Trade Center. you know, all I had to do was find those big buildings and head towards that.
Right, that's where you knew where you were to get home. Yeah, that was great with Mitch there. I'm trying to think, were we all in Montreal together one year?
Yes.
That was the year Mitch, like, really exploded.
Yeah, it was,
just
yeah.
Just took off huge. That was probably the summer before.
I think that was 98, yeah. It was Montreal.
And then that was February of 99. Yeah, just knowing Mitch, like, Mitch used to crash at our place. He was good friends with my old roommate, Brian Mallow. And they did that movie together.
Los Angeles.
Yeah, that still hasn't, I don't think it's officially come out of or anything, but it's this, like, legendary project that they had. But mm-hmm. Mitch, I met Mitch in Nashville doing the Comedy on the Road TV show.
I remember that show, too.
And it was an A&E show.
Oh.
And Becky was booking it.
Oh, that's right. I did it in Acapulco with
Drew Carey. Yeah, they did it all over the place. And Mitch, Becky said, Dave Becky said, the booker, he said, yeah, look out for Mitch Hedberg. You guys will get along. And we met. We were on the same show. And we did. You know, we hung out in Nashville. And this, like, Mitch was staying in this divey hotel in Nashville. I couldn't even tell you where it was. But it was just, like, pimps and crackheads and, you know, all kinds. You know, like, he enjoyed that sort of part of life, I think, you know, living amongst the sort of the different people. Like, he didn't want to stay in a regular, he wanted to stay somewhere that had some sort of, you know, atmosphere and coolness to it. And
well, you could hear a guy arguing with his chick through the door.
Absolutely. Yeah. He was into that, man. And but that's when I first met him. And I was going to move out to the Bay Area, and that's when he was living in Pacifica. So I was his roommate, technically, for a couple of months, although I never made it out there. I just paid him rent, and then he moved to L.A. He called me up and says, hey, I'm leaving town. So we don't live together anymore. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, good. I'm glad I paid for a room for 3 months. But Mitch was quite unique and amazing. And then, you know, he sort of got bigger and you didn't see him as much after that, you know, because he just, everything took off for him and he just sort of, I don't know if he was ever really comfortable again, you know, with all of that.
Success. Yeah, because, I mean, he was really shy. And then when we co-headlined these. We took less money. We did the Punchline and the Houston Laugh Stop together. And
yeah.
I think Chicago and Atlanta. And it was great, you know, and he loved hanging out and he loved meeting people and we always did and had great times with different people. And then afterwards, when there were so many people swarming around him and stuff and he was shy, he would just go right back to the hotel. I don't think he knew how to deal with it.
Well, you could see it happening in Montreal. Like, he was the talked about guy.
Yeah.
And you could see him sort of retreating in a little bit, like, holy shit, what is this, you know? And I guess it's got to be hard for anybody, but you'd think he'd go, yeah, right, it's about time.
Yeah.
You know, everybody should be paying attention to me, but it really sort of, I think it was hard for him to deal with all the adulation and the attention and that. But you go, yeah, well, that's kind of why you were doing it, right? I mean, not just to get the attention, but it's like, he was a fairly ambitious and driven guy, too, I think. So, you know, you couldn't go, well, This is what you're sort of working towards, you know.
Well, the amazing thing I always said about Hedberg is, you know, as hard as he partied, and I did a lot of coke with him, you know, in the New York period.
Yeah.
And we were doing tons of coke, and I frightened myself. I never thought I'd get really involved with it, but, you know, whatever. I was
at
a low point in my life, and, you know, and I was having the time of my life hanging out with Hedberg. But the thing that always killed me about cocaine, I think it's the worst drug in the world for a comedian. It screws up your timing, and then it's your brain is, you know, haywired, and you it's just I was unable to come up with jokes. And, you know, the one thing if I ever do drugs, I want to get a joke out of it, you know? Right. You better get something out of it. And I just thought coke was worthless like that. But Hedberg was probably his most prolific period.
Yeah.
He was, yeah. I couldn't believe him. You know, I'd been hanging out with the guy for 3 days straight. He goes on, he's got a new 5 minutes about ducks and weird shit. Like, wait, when did you have the time to, when we were like, you know, hanging out with those black guys by the, you know, in some apartment near the entrance of the Holland Tunnel.
Hey, I've been on the David Letterman show twice. Anyone see me? Hey, I'll be damned. Like 4 million people watch that show, and I don't know where the hell they are. But that's my favorite introduction I've ever had. You might have seen this next comedian on the David Letterman show. But I believe more people have seen me at the store. And that would be a better introduction. You might have seen this next comedian at the store. And people would say, hell yes, I have. I opened up a yogurt, and underneath the lid, it said, please try again. They were having a contest I was unaware of. But I thought I might have opened the yogurt wrong. Or maybe Yoplait was trying to inspire me. Come on, Mitch, don't give up. Please try again. A message of inspiration from your friends at Yoplait. Fruit on the bottom, hope on top. I used to do drugs. I still do, but I used to too. I like to play blackjack. I'm not addicted to gambling. I'm addicted to sitting in a semi-circle. My friend is a blackjack dealer, and on his forearm, he has a tattoo of an ace and a jack. You see, I'm a blackjack player. On my forearm, I'm gonna get a tattoo of a 10 and a 2. And then maybe later, a king. I think Bigfoot is blurry. That's the problem. It's not the photographer's fault. Bigfoot is blurry. And that's extra scary to me because there's a large out-of-focus monster roaming the countryside. One time a guy handed me a picture of me. He said, here's a picture of me when I was younger. Every picture is of you when you were younger. Ain't that about time someone said that?
What about Bill Hicks, man? What
about Bill? You know, Bill's become such a myth? Mythic person now.
Yeah.
And to actually think, like, why? I mean, I worked with him. I knew him.
Yeah.
It's sort of kind of cool because so many people never even got to see him.
Yeah.
And you think, like, holy shit, I hung out with Bill. I wasn't one of Bill's best friends or tight buddies or you know, companions or anything like that. But I saw him the very first time he did Letterman. And I was maybe in college. I think it was 84. I was either in high school or college. And, you know, that's when his jokes were sort of the, you know, his jokes about his childhood, about throwing the pencil in the guy's eye, and the wheelchair, you know, the wheelchair one, all this hilarious stuff, but not the stuff that he sort of became known for later on. I remember he had a joke about how can they tell if you're stealing HBO or stealing cable or whatever, and what does somebody come up and go, hey man, what happened on Fraggle Rock? Just silly jokes like that, you know?
Yeah.
But it knocked me out, you know? And then he was on there a few times. And then Bill sort of disappeared from the show. And he talked about it himself in a lot of articles that he just sort of alienated himself from the show and had to work his way back. And by about 88, 89, I'd been doing stand-up a year. And Bill sort of showed up on TV again. And you go, oh, shit, this guy, remember this guy, you know? And he just had that meteoric rise. All of a sudden, everybody went, this guy's the greatest guy ever. You know, he sort of cleaned himself up and moved to New York, and that was his thing. And you know, I bought his cassette tape of Dangerous, and it was just, you know, pretty amazing. And then I went and saw him. He came through when I was living in Dallas. He came through town. I saw his show. It was unbelievable. It was just unbelievable. Just this guy just went on stage and just did everything that you know. It's hard to explain to people that had never saw him what it was like, you know. And I saw him in that period, that peak sort of, you know, rise period in May of 1990. And he just took to the set, and he was doing that bit, opening bit about hijacking the plane to where it was supposed to go in the first place, you know, and it just started with this kick of energy and just this whole thing, and it didn't let loose the whole time. And it was just, you could feel like the presence. You in the audience, you just went, holy shit, man, this is amazing, you know. And then the next year I got to open for Bill. It was a two-act show. And I'd always felt pretty good on stage, but I just remember that night feeling nervous, really nervous about being on stage. Like, oh shit, you know, Bill had just shown up and I went on, and just nervous knowing that Bill was there, maybe watching the set. And I'd never been that nervous on stage at that point. And I remember saying to myself, you know, like, fucking, okay, pull this shit together. And we had a really great week, and it was just, I learned so much just from watching him. And he was really cool to me. And he'd just come out with a music set of songs from his band, Marblehead Johnson. I'd seen it earlier in the year. Jeff Wills had showed me a copy of it. Jeff Wills, the booker from San Francisco. And so I asked Bill, I said, how can I get a copy of this, these songs, this cassette tape? And he goes, oh, yeah, I don't have any more, man. I think we only did a limited number of them, you know. And that was on the first night. And on Friday night, he showed up while I was on stage. And I introduced him, and I held my hand out to shake his hand. And as he shook my hand, he palmed in a copy of that tape, a cassette tape of Marblehead Johnson. And he said afterwards, he said, yeah, I found one in my bag. So I felt that was kind of cool. Like, well, I guess he likes me enough that he went through his bag and found, like, he says, the last one I have, you know, and he gave it to me, and it's sitting up here somewhere in this room.
Nice.
But, you know, it just goes to show, like, here's this guy, you know, like, he didn't have to give that to me. He could have just left it, like, I don't have any more, you know.
Yeah.
But he went and found it and gave it to me, and then I saw him the next year in San Francisco. I saw him in Austin, a few places. He was always great. He never went, I mean, I see people now I've worked with many, many times, and they don't remember me. You know, different comics.
And Bill always remembered you.
Bill, every time I saw Bill, he'd go, Jimmy!
Yeah, you know, like he did it with me, too. And Tommy! The story I always tell people, you know, he was such a nice guy, and I moved to New York when I was, I worked with him in Orlando, and I was like an MC.
Yeah.
And I was terrible, and he was really nice to me. We went out and had late night breakfast, and then I moved to New York. And it was like the worst year of my life. I'm 20, couldn't get sets anywhere, and I'm hanging out like Catch a Rising Star and shit. And Bill was like the man on Letterman and everybody's hero. And he'd walk in, and all these like clicked New York snooty comedians who wouldn't talk to me are all at the bar, and I'm by myself. And Bill would go, Tommy, and walk in and go straight to me. And, hey, how's it going? Is it working for you? How's the city? How's comedy? And like, and you could just feel the heart sink of all these, you know, New York snooty pantses.
Right, who just wanted that little bit of recognition from him. And he was just so amazing like that. We went out to lunch that week. I took him to the Hard Rock Cafe, which is not, he wanted to find a Stevie Ray Vaughan guitar. Stevie Ray had died the year before, and it was Stevie Ray's birthday week when I worked with him. And I couldn't think of where to go at the time. I thought, well, maybe the Hard Rock might have something, you know, kind of a weird place to go. And they didn't have a Stevie Ray guitar, but they had an Elvis jumpsuit behind glass. And Bill knelt in front of it and did the Elvis hands. Oh, man, he did that, you know. And I went, fuck, I saw Bill kneel before an Elvis jumpsuit, man. How cool is that? You know, it's just, that's my memory of Bill. Ah, sort of paying homage to Elvis.
That's beautiful. I remember seeing Bill at the Punchline in those days. And, you know, and again, he always remembered me and was always nice to me. And I did the Alex Bennett show with him.
Right.
And one of his CDs had come out. Well, it was his cassette. And I remember Alex Bennett's talking, and he was an interesting character. And there were so many people around. And Bill was there promoting his Punchline appearance. And he had also come out with a thing. And then after the show, it was sitting there, and everybody was saying goodbye. And I pocketed it.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think I still have a... Wow. You know, and it's like a promo,
right,
copy,
right
for promotional purposes, no, only in that, my apartment, over and over. So
he was cool.
I think, you know, we kind of come from that the Bill Hicks school, or whatever you want to call it, the Kerouac school, or I don't know, just the, what is it, we both try to be thinking men.
Well, I think he set that standard, too, of, like, you know, trying. I don't ever think Bill wanted people to walk out of his show, though.
No, I think it killed him.
A lot of guys now have taken the thing of, like, people walk down on Bill and, like, well, I'll make
people, like, it was a defiant
out
thing. Oh, yeah, well, that's the misconception people have about Bill. Like, people who try and emulate him a lot of times are, like, dicks to people. And yeah. Try and, like, just think they're, that's the way to, that wasn't how Bill was at all.
I mean, he could get that way. He could yell at people. And, I mean, there's enough footage of him yelling at so-and-so. But they were the people who were disrupting the show.
Yeah.
They were the people who needed to be yelled at. But, I mean, he would lament the fact that people, because he wanted to reach people. And he put that idea in there, like, you know, like, well, not everything has to have a social message, but some of it can. And why not have some of it have some relevance to it?
But what do you mean? But like, I don't know what you would, that style of comedy, don't you think that's probably the most difficult to, like,
well, because sometimes
to make sense of, like, events of the world.
Sometimes you can say things that are right and true, but they're just not that funny. And that's what people forget. Bill made points. Bill had opinions. Bill sometimes boldly told you his opinion, but there was always something funny to go with it.
Yeah.
And I think now people are much more reactionary, too, though. People hear a word or something and they just get offended, you know. I mean, I saw Bill do some stuff that was pretty amazing, but people just went, well, I can see his point. I see where he's, I may not believe that, but I see his point. Then there were some people who just went, fuck, I don't believe that. You know, people got angry or whatever, but he always had the joke to back it up. But some people now, they have the point, but they don't have the joke to back it up. And it's funny because you see a lot of guys, you can tell when somebody's watched a lot of Bill because they have his mannerisms. They have the that little fingery point with it, you know, the wiggly wrist with the finger. When you kind of illustrate a point and your finger, I don't know if this is great on audio, but look at a tape of Bill. You just always got to watch a tape of Bill, and he does the finger. Let me tell you something here, with the finger, you know, go, and you just can tell when somebody's watched a lot of Bill. You watch a comic and he gets up there and that finger comes out and you're like, Bill, you're a Bill guy. Yeah. And you got, I mean, that's the thing, especially as a young comic, you get influenced by all of that, but then you got to wash it out to where.
Right, I think with most young comedians, you can watch them and see who their influence is. Yeah. You know, who.
Well, Mitch certainly left a big trail of people that really love Mitch and do a Mitch thing as well. But Bill was always really cool. That every time I saw him, it was, and I was nobody. I was just some opening act guy that at that time especially. But he never treated you like, fuck, I'm Bill Hicks. Why are you here trying to talk to me?
Yeah, totally.
It was like,
and I always wanted him to see me when I after I'd moved to San Francisco. That's where I got good as a comedian, and I saw him perform. He never got to see me, you know, and like. I wanted to show him, hey, I've gotten better.
I know, right? Like, hey.
Because he was always nice to me.
But I think he knew, you know, I mean, you know, it's like, he certainly didn't put up with people that he didn't like, I guess, but I don't know, he was just always cool to me, and just, I'm just so happy I got the chance to see him perform as many times as I did.
Yeah.
Especially when so many people now love him and never got to even see him once. And, I mean, that's just the nature of life. You just don't know when somebody's going to be taken, but, you know, I got to see him a bunch of times, and that's a real, that's something I have that a lot of people don't have, you know?
Yeah.
They never even got to see him at all, so that's, you know, when you try to figure out, well, what are the cool things about what we do, and that's it, you know, the seeing great comedy sometimes.
Seeing a master. Yeah, I saw him a bunch.
I had no luck in school. I'll tell you my luck, man. You tell me if this sucks. One day in first grade, our teacher left the room for like a minute. We started playing keep away from this girl with her pencil. We're all in first grade. We're laughing. Y'all quit it. Give me my pencil. Would you quit it? I need my pencil. Pencil came to me. I throw it. Goes in this guy's eye. Blinds him for life. Everyone in class goes, Jesus, Hicks, it's a game. What are you, a psycho or something? Now suddenly, I'm Henry Lee Hicks here. Because this guy can't catch a number two pencil like a normal human. You know, I got it. Good move, you dork. I'm an assassin now. Teacher came back in the room. Hicks stabbed him. Oh, suddenly I went for the guy. Come on. It was a childhood game. It went askew.
I saw Richard Pryor once with my dad, and it was Richard Pryor's 50th birthday. At the Comedy Store, and he had MS, and he's in a wheelchair, and he could barely lift his head up, and he could barely hold the microphone. They had to, like, lift his wheelchair on the thing. And I remember at the time thinking, oh, geez, he's not the young, prowling panther. But now, looking back, I'm glad I got to be in a room with him once while he was on stage.
Yeah.
And I was with my dad, who's no longer of the earth. It's like a great memory I had with my dad.
Then
together we went and saw Pryor. And then the other thing I think about is, holy shit, I just turned 45. Pryor was dead like 2 years later or some shit.
Yeah,
after
his
50th birthday. So,
It gives you that perspective.
If you'll excuse me, I have to go get busy. I've got a limited amount of time to turn this career around.
I got some work to do. Yeah. Well, that's the thing that keeps us there. We all hope that it'll kick in. I never saw Pryor. I've seen a lot of great comics. I got to see Bill many times. I tell you, one of the greatest shows I ever saw was about 3-4 years ago. Billy Connolly, 65 years old, just fucking hilarious, just funny. Just walks out and starts talking. And it's like that piss your pants funny kind of stuff. And it was just amazing, you know, just amazing. And he was just so good, and just this, you could just see with a whole career, years and years, it was just this guy that was so in complete control of the stage. It was just amazing.
Now, like with George Carlin, he just seemed to get better as he got older.
Yeah. That's the, you know, everybody who writes off all the older people on stage doing comedy. I mean, you know, there's some wisdom there still. You know, and people forget about it, that there's people who know, I mean, just the craft of writing a joke and whatever it's about, I want to be like the old guy, like these goddamn kids now, and they don't, but sometimes you see somebody and you go, there's no jokes in that act.
Yeah.
You know, so when you
see it a lot
with like real jokes and everything, who knows what they're doing, it's amazing. And, but you know, we're like, like blacksmiths now, you know, it's like that dying art of, you know, you need your horse shoed, come on in here, I'll do it.
So how, I mean, is American politics hilarious?
I don't know if it is. You know what it is, because it is hilarious. I mean, there's funny things to it all, but like most people don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Most people don't care or don't know, or that's the thing now. It's like, it's such every... It's funny because...
I think they should have to go on American Idol and sing a song. That should be part of it.
Well,
right after the primaries.
It's good. You know what? That's what it is. they have to put out an album and it sells. It's getting that way now. It's pretty much like presidential idol anyway. You know, it's just a popularity thing. And you know what? It doesn't fucking... Does it matter who's in charge anymore? Does shit really get better for anyone?
Yeah, not really. I mean, I don't see much change.
I mean, my analogy with everything right now, you know, you had Bush there, and now you got Obama, and I don't know. I mean, and they both got a fair amount of. It's like some guy shit his pants in a room, and Bush was standing there, and he walked off just as Obama walked in, and you go, who just shit their pants in here? I don't know. Which one of you guys did this?
Hey!
I can't tell. I just know somebody shit their pants.
He who smelt it, dealt it. That's the only response to that.
They built a wall at the border between the United States and Mexico. That really angers me, man. These are the people who gave us the margarita. Why would we separate ourselves from such magic people? I don't know if you read in the newspaper, but Mexico is considering legalizing all forms of drugs. If they do that, they'll have to build a wall to keep me out. Mexico, por favor, it's your amigo Tomas, please. I can do yard work. I can clean. I'll stand in front of El Casa Depot all day. We need to annex Mexico and make it part of the United States, everybody. That's our destiny. We need to annex Mexico, and we need to get rid of our flag, and we need to adopt Mexico's flag. It's got an eagle standing on a cactus, squeezing the shit out of a rattlesnake. Nobody would ever fuck with us if we carried that shit. Does anybody fuck with Mexico? No, and it's because of that flag. We need to annex Mexico, make it part of the United States, and we need to send the drug cartels from the north of Mexico to Iraq and Afghanistan and turn them loose. And those Iraqis and Afghans would be left to wonder. Who were those people with the Virgin Mary tattoo? They were the most ruthless people we had ever met in our lives. We should have looked at their flag and known not to fuck with them.
I'm just impressed that Mitt Romney could remove the bolts from his neck and hide the Frankenstein stitches on his forehead. Yeah, the way he learned to walk and bend his legs.
Yeah,
I mean, that took a big effort for him not to look like the Frankenstein that he really is.
He I don't know, man. It's just that, just the whole field of people running, every week one of them was the front runner, and then they would find some reason, like, you know, it was Perry, and then you go, I was in Texas, you know, and I haven't lived there in a long time, and I just said, did you guys know this guy was that crazy?
Yeah.
That, like, unhinged? He was just crazy. Just bizarre behavior.
Mandatory shots or vaccinations that people had to do?
And just his mannerisms, his goofiness about shit, you know? You're like, fuck, did you guys know this? He's like a Bush brother with John Edwards hair, you know? It's like, just like this goofy guy. And then Kane was in there. Kane was the guy for a while, and people found out.
Everybody loved that he was black, and he had been a CEO of Godfather's Pizza. The Republicans really loved that and rallied around that.
Yeah.
So after he was disgraced with the sex scandal, I thought for sure the Republicans were going to bring out the famous Amos Cookie guy. he's another wealthy African-American entrepreneur.
They
bring cookies for everybody. I think he'd be a shoo-in.
Oh, man. Oh, shit. Yeah, I don't know. Who else do you go to after that? Magic Johnson?
Movie theater tickets. Do you think Kim Jong-un is going to live up to his father's standards?
Wow, that's him. You know, talk about daddy issues. That guy.
I just hope he keeps the man one piece jumpsuit alive.
Yeah.
But his dad totally loved Elvis with the
and he's getting the greeny, the military jumpsuit thing.
Yeah, and the men's hairspray and the big sunglasses.
Yeah. That's a big deal. Like, you know, like to follow in your dad's footsteps like that.
It's got to be tough when you're in a, you know, when you're fat in a country full of people starving to death. He's got to be real self-conscious about that.
Hey,
I'm going to go back to the palace and eat more chicken. Nah, you guys keep working on that railroad. The curious fact about his father, Kim Jong-il, that he loved cinema and he like had seen every movie that won the Academy Award.
Oh, really?
Every best picture he had seen. And he kidnapped a South Korean, in South Korea. Kidnapped a South Korean film director and an actress and, like, brought him back to, you know, make movies against their will. So, I mean, this guy went to all this effort to make cinema. And I think
everybody wants to direct.
I think clearly the North Koreans are bad actors. Otherwise, why wouldn't they have had? There must have been. So the guy had vision. He was trying to make a star out of their people, and they couldn't get it together.
Are they doing a tribute to him this year at the Oscars?
They should.
They should have a tribute to him. Like some dance number. Actually, that's what Billy Crystal should do. Come out in like in a montage of Kim Jong Il's favorite movies. And do some songs about him.
And apparently he had every basketball game, every professional basketball game Michael Jordan had ever played in.
Really?
Yeah, I read this in the New York Times obituary thing.
Wow, that's the weird stuff where you go, come on, man. If you want some shoes, just, you know, tell us. We'll get you some, some Jordans, man. And we'll get you a Blu-ray player. Just fucking chill out. I love how he wanted Bill Clinton, too, to come over a couple years ago. You want these chicks?
Yeah.
You got to send over Bill Clinton. He can get him out.
I bet they had a good time that night.
Yeah.
Do vampires and zombies have to be in every film now?
I think so.
What is it?
That's what it's... Every movie and TV show. I am not interested in any... vampire, Dracula-type movie unless Abbott and Costello were involved. That's all I'm watching. You don't get any better than that, man. I don't need, you know, Twilight. I don't need True Blood. Just give me, you know, Lou Costello trying to not looking behind him and grabbing the Wolfman's head. That's your Twilight right there. That's that thing now. Like everything's got a goddamn vampire in it somewhere, or a zombie or something. And it's just there's. I mean, surely there's more creative, original stuff than what we're being sent and presented. But you know, it's like I could just imagine if you had a script now, they'd be like, "Fuck, is there a zombie?
Where's the vamp? When's the vampire show up?" Yeah. So the other thing I want to talk to you about is your animation. I can't believe what you're doing with animation now. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know why more people haven't seen it.
No, I just started making a few videos and I put them online. But in 2010 and 2011, which just passed, I haven't finished it yet. My 2011 Christmas film I was working on and I didn't finish it. It'll be up soon. It's stop motion animation where I took all these little characters and animated them, and it's all the Rudolph characters and Santa and all that stuff, and look back on the events of the year with it. But you know, it's just fun to sit in a room on your own and play with toys.
I've seen the sets. I've seen the dolls.
Yeah.
You showed me how you did it on the stop action one frame thing.
Yeah.
And it seems like it must have taken an eternity to do like just a few minutes of film.
But, you know, especially if you grew up around about when we did, that was the, you know, there wasn't the computer animation and you know, I mean, not that that's any easier to do, but, you know, those little puppet things where they move them frame by frame, and every Christmas that you would look forward to those, you know, the Rudolph one and the Year Without Santa and all that kind of stuff.
The Heat Miser.
The Heat Misers and all that stuff. So I did a full-on sort of parody of that, and hugely time-consuming for the few amount of hits it got. But
well, I'm going to promote it on my media, really, and that'll get you 500 more viewers.
Yes, yeah, exactly. That's the thing. You say,
I'll match your 482 followers with my 512 followers.
But
and we'll link them, and we still won't have 1,000.
Together we can almost get up to.
I know. You can link your friggin' fire points. Why can't we link
our... I know, right? Our views. Refuse our views. It's just another creative thing to do, but I always enjoyed animation anyway, and it's just cool to, I mean, the technology is so amazing of what you can do now, and it's just fun to do it. So
you're really talented, man, and it really looks fantastic. And I think hard work has got to pay off sooner or later, man. People will see that. It's really funny, the thing, and you got Anthony Weiner and all these events that happened in 2011. It's really funny.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun, and I mean, you know, you'd really do it for yourself. So that's.
Well, I'm just kissing ass in case it takes off like South Park. Just remember me when you're passing out, you know, the voiceover parts.
I don't know. I'm that guy that it just never happens. You know, it just never happens. So, but you know, you give it a go, right? You just do it.
Hey, man, we're slugging it out, and
living that dream.
Living the dream, baby. Beats heavy lifting. Do you have any words of wisdom or advice you'd like to give the people of the world?
Yeah.
And if you do, can you condense that to 140 characters?
Words of wisdom. I'm not that wise.
All right, well, you know.
I'm not that poignant.
How can we go out?
You know what? Have a good laugh and enjoy yourself and enjoy your friends, because that's, you know, then your family and the people that are important, because, you know, everything, it doesn't matter. And laughter is just having a good laugh every day. It just makes it better.
Amen, brother. Well, hey, I think you're a wizard of great power. It's been a pleasure watching you work all these years.
It's better than being a wizard of white power. Which I've also been called. I couldn't resist the interjection there. I'm sorry.
That's no problem. All right, brother. I give you a Mexico City 1968 Black Power salute.